before we started. Just love me, love my dog, if you can't understand. Then I guess we'll have to move on out of plan.
And ensuring that whatever your show, whatever event you take your pets to, think about sun protection form, etc. To address that, we're delighted to welcome the tremendously talented, extraordinary, legendary head vet at the Battersea Dogs and Cats Home, the main man, Sean Opperman. How are you, Sean?
I'm very well, and thank you for that very warm introduction.
It's the only way forward. And, of course, our main vet extraordinaire, in every sense of the word, that would be veterinary director, Pet Plans resident vet, in fact, Brian Faulkner. How are you, Brian?
Very well, thank you, Alex.
Excellent. There we are. Sort of things through. Mm. Brian, if we can come to you first. Mm-hmm. This whole question about sunscreen for dogs. Initially, people might have thought, you must be joking. Surely they don't suffer. But they do, of course.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's all sorts of sort of heat-related challenges with this sort of weather that we're experiencing. And so we all know, I suspect, all about dogs being left in hot cars. And that's a message that we send out again and again. But yet it still happens. But it's not just hot cars that are problems during the hot weather. So we've got other environments like conservatories and anywhere at all. But yeah, in terms of heat illnesses, cats are very prone to actually sunburn on the tips of their ears and their nose, and they can actually develop into skin cancer. Mm. Dogs, because of the nature of perhaps how we look after them, whilst they are vulnerable, are less so than cats in terms of skin cancer, but are very, very much more prone to overheating because of their longer coat and just their difficulties in actually expiring heat.
I know there's a great deal you can play about when you start talking about percentages, but I was astounded to find that Petplan's research into this said that costs of claims for dogs with heat stroke increased by 128%, which sounds a phenomenal routine. And injury claims, of course, for dogs 20% higher in July than in any of the other cooler months of the year.
Yeah, we're seeing it consistently. I mean, Petplan have been going for 37 years now, but we just see it year after year after year that July in particular, we've got this spike of all sorts of heat-related and injury-related claims which happen. And I guess when we're all out and about a little bit more in hot weather, it happens. But I guess we're always surprised the message goes out, but still the same things happen again and again. And we just maybe need to be that little bit more proactive.
Indeed. Going to the Battersea Dogs and Cats Home, let's not forget our feline colleagues who are obviously there at Battersea as well. Sean, from your own perspective, is this something that resonates with the kind of animals you see coming in to Battersea, that sometimes they could be suffering from heat stroke and so on?
Yes, it is, Alex. You know, we've at any one time we've got sort of over 400 dogs across our three sites, and a lot of the dogs we get in are ball breeds as well. A lot of dogs, pugs and the like. And remember, these dogs have got quite sort of squashed up faces, and in hot weather, when they're panting a lot and the tissues of the mouth swell, they can find it a little bit harder to breathe too. Because one of the problems with dogs is once they do take on heat, they're not very good at losing it. And panting is not really a very efficient way of losing heat. So we're really mindful of it in the summer weather. Particularly, we take dogs out for walks earlier in the day. All our staff are really tuned to the sort of signs of heat stroke. We make sure, of course, they've got access to fresh water. And I think one of the things is we tend to think of just sort of hot, sunny days, which are the real problem. But actually, we find that that's those sort of overcast, muggy, humid, sticky days are just as much a problem for dogs.
We live in a world of TLAs, three-letter acronyms. One of the classic ones is not sun protection factor, but in this instance, summer-proof fun and an SPF guide. Would you like to share with us, Brian, the whole notion of this SPF guide, which, of course, is available online as well?
Well, that's right. What we wanted was to give people some sort of indication of risk assessment. So what we've done is we've created a guide at Petplan using a combination of the colour of your dog's coat. For example, we know that black coats are particularly heat absorbent. The length of the coat makes sense. The longer the coat, the more heat is going to be retained. But also, as Sean was implying there, in terms of the length of the face, bulldogs, pugs, squashed face breeds find it much more difficult to expel heat. So that's a risk factor, as well as extreme age, either being very old or actually very young, just the same as it would be in people. So the guide online, it's quite easy. You just go in, you just select each feature, and in relation to yours, you get a score, you add them together, and you get an assessment. Is your dog particularly low, medium, or high risk? And then there's information about things you could do about that.
petplan.co.uk/summer safety. I know that cats and dogs get cleverer, it would seem, by the day. Presumably they need their human companions to actually access the guide, though.
Smartphones and dogs, yeah, it's a whole new market.
It is, and in fact, you know, many of our best listeners have been from the canine and feline area, so we gather. We had a budgerigar in Los Angeles and Jersey who actually likes to listen to the music of Glen Campbell, but then that's the line. Sean, just returning to your good self in terms of the breed sequence at Battersea. I mean, clearly you have fantastic operation there. I mean, many people are familiar with the tremendous work that you actually do. Is it a case of sometimes you think, well, you know, people don't learn? I mean, so some of the kind of areas that we're faced with in terms of this, when new humans come along to actually say, oh, I'd quite like to take that particular dog, etc., do they need to be made aware of the sort of things they're taking on board? Because it is a responsibility. It's not just a case of, oh, I fancy a dog or a cat. You know, you've got sort of responsibilities as well here.
Yeah, that's right. And when people come down to rehome a dog from Battersea, you know, which is a fabulous thing to do, but we do take time and sit down with them and go through what their sort of requirements are, where they live, how much time they can spend with a dog. You know, some perhaps older dogs need a little bit less time. And likewise with cats, what their sort of lifestyle is like. So we're very careful to match up the right dog to the right person.
And Brian, allowing for the fact that most canines often tend to have more sense than their owners occasionally, so they kind of know what to do to keep cool. But would you say keep them in the shade? Clearly don't keep them in locked vehicles. Make sure that they have plenty of water, that they can actually use their own systems to sort of, you know, stay cool. And for goodness sakes, don't put them in some of those doggy coats.
Yeah, that's right. It's again, forgetting that dogs are often at the end of a lead to us, and that restricts their choices sometimes. And we just have to think for them, walking towards shade, making sure there's water available if they want to go for water. Sometimes, of course, if a dog's tugging on a lead, we think he wants to go and play with somebody else. And actually what he's maybe looking for is a drink. So we just need a bottle of water that we can squirt so we can lap out of the bottle, or we can put it on his coat to cool him down. All sorts of things. We just need to do that little bit of extra thought.
And part of the summer health awareness campaign that we've been speaking about today can also be found on the Battersea Guide. Presumably that's battersea.org.uk, again, /fun in the sun.
That's correct.
You see, we've done our research in terms of this. It's all put together from that point of view. Sean, what do you have any pets yourself? And have you ever had instances where, from that point of view, you thought this is actually quite a useful thing to bear in mind from a pet keeper's point of view?
Well, I don't actually have any pets myself.
That's unbelievable. I couldn't possibly.
It's a shameful revelation, isn't it? But actually, you know, if I want to take a dog for what there's 400 to choose from at any one time. And we just live and breathe dogs and cats at Battersea, of course, all the time.
And Brian, your own sort of line of things? Any particular favourite pet for yourself? Or?
Yeah, we've got a miniature Labradoodle called Bear. And he's 2 years old, and the kids absolutely love him. And it's always good just to remind yourself just what, of course, our clients as veterinary surgeons, just how we think. And he's a big part of our family.
Absolutely. I was amazed by the opening ceremony of the Commonwealth Games. They had all those Scottish Terriers that were using. I thought they must be overheating in those little coats, but I think it was in the evening time, so they probably were all right. We wouldn't want to set up the Commonwealth Games sort of scenario on the basis of poor pet care, after all.
Let's not.
No, precisely. Gentlemen, it's been fantastic sharing some of the importance of, as we said, SPF, summer-proof fun for cats and dogs. Web address is, of course, available as well, battersea.org.uk, or indeed petplan.co.uk. Two final questions for your good self. Have you both had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
Yes, thank you very much, Alex. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Alex.
You are both legends now. I'll sort of say that's classic in every sense of the word. So I take it we can probably look forward to connecting with you again in the not-too-distant future.
Thank you, Alex.
Thank you.
Brian Faulkner, Petplan's resident vet and indeed top vet at Battersea Dogs Home, Sean Opperman. We salute you. Take care now. And of course, one of the missing aspects of the Battersea Dogs and Cats Home, even though we introduced budgerigars, was of course the lack of raccoons. To address that issue and a whole heap of others, including trees and Star-Lord and Peter Quill and an adventure that effectively has thrilled SFX magazine and a whole heap of other fine folk, 'tis only right that with the music to Guardians United, Guardians of the Galaxy by Tyler Bates in the background, we welcome the Regal correspondent extraordinaire and ace film critic, it's Richard Fitzwilliams. Hey!
Indeed, as you say, there is no dog, but Rocket Raccoon is more than enough to make up for the absence of any other animal. Yeah. A terrific creature, and this third dust, I think we're going to get with the merchandise that's being sold linked to the Guardians. I think the raccoon will be the most popular.
Feisty, and indeed the voice of Bradley Cooper. The way he actually channels that voice, amazing. Still. This is the moment, of course, that the world has been waiting for, because it's all very well our Los Angeles correspondents from the San Diego Comic-Con waxing lyrical about Guardians of the Galaxy and James Gunn and so on, and other folk on other stations actually saying it could have the same seismic effect as Star Wars did in 1977. Ironic, given that Guardians of the Galaxy officially launched in 1976 with the comic book. A little bit of information there you may not be aware of, but there we are. What did you make of it, Richard Fitzwilliams?
Colourful, it's a terrific saga, it will please the fans, and it also greatly pleased me, and I do have to say it had a splendid climactic battle. A lot of these sci-fi movies have been failing in this regard, and this one definitely succeeds. And you've got this earthling pilot, Peter Quill, played by Chris Pratt, who is being chased after stealing this orb, and this orb assumes particular importance when we see its magical properties. And this group of extraterrestrial misfits on the run, Zoe Saldana, and we saw her in Avatar.
She was blue there, of course. She's green in Guardians of the Galaxy. It's important to get your colour thing sorted out.
It is indeed, because, of course, we...
And she is Lieutenant Uhura in Star Trek, of course, the rebooted franchise.
And we have also Groot, Vin Diesel.
What a man! How he actually manages to actually encompass so much emotion in so little dialogue. Phenomenal.
No question that it's a very interesting performance, and also it's a creation, although I have to say that we've had rather a large number of tree-like beings over the years.
Well, the Ents, of course, the Ents did actually sort of set the scene for that. But as I pointed out, Groot and Guardians of the Galaxy, Bill Mantlo originally founded them, and the first comic Guardians of the Galaxy emerged in 1976.
Quite a while ago. Mm. And, of course, there we must not forget Drax.
Well,
Dave Bautista.
He's a big guy, isn't he? A big guy.
He is indeed substantial, but large he may be, but my goodness me, ferocious when it comes to protecting the galaxy. And there's plenty of evil out there, too. Thanos.
Thanos, destroyer of worlds, who was trailed ahead in, I think, the end of Avengers and so on. All sorts of other areas. This is a double whammy of joy, because last week we were waxing lyrical, obviously, over Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. Also,
which is very impressive. Yes, it's extremely good, and the tension in that sustained excellently. Now, here you've got something that's colourful, something that's pacey, something that works, and something that the fans, as I say, are going to enjoy it. And you've got, obviously, Rocket Raccoon is, I think, central to it all, because there's real charm in this creature. But if you're on the receiving end when Rocket Raccoon is opening fire, beware.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, very.
And
essential.
Also, don't let's forget Benicio del Toro, Glenn Close.
Karen Gillan.
Indeed. Mm.
She shaved her head for the role, for goodness sakes.
Yes, quite a memorable part there. Yes, a strange mask, you could say.
Now, moving on, I predicted a week or so ago that a movie you were probably wax lyrical about as well was indeed Michael Gondry's latest effort. Of course, man behind Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. Also, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. Let's get the name correct here. And also, he did Green Hornet, which I don't think was quite as bad as people made it out. But Mood Indigo with Audrey Tautou is also out there. It's surreal, I think. But how did you rate this year's Choice of Sci-Fi London in terms of the Mood Indigo? How did the mood take you, Richard?
The mood took me to levels of, well, I would say catatonic levels.
Oh, no.
A lot of this. No, but what we've got here, I have to admit, firstly, that I wasn't one of them. There were very, very few weren't. An admirer of Eternal Sun, sign of the spotless mind, it was no doubt skilled, but didn't greatly appeal to me. But here you've got what, I have the notes in front of me, a surreal and poetic tale of Colin and of Chloe, their marriage is idyllic, but Chloe falls sick with a water lily, growing in her lung. Now, in this movie, I mean, you name it and it moves, it does weird things.
It's and like it starts off in colour, and then fades to monochrome.
Well, I mean, whether it did or whether it didn't, it's literally gone completely out of my mind. What I would do, in fact, is have Rocket Raccoon invade it and attack the characters. I really thought that I was being bombarded with, whether it's a door handle that goes ape, or whether it's food that does strange things and levitates. If you waste... And this is really, this is appalling. I mean, you waste Romain Duris, I have to say. He always loves close-ups of himself, but having said that, he is an actor of much skill, and he's, together with Audrey Tautou, well, I mean, she's been, since Amelie and so many other movies, I mean, she's been terribly good. Gad Elmaleh.
The Da Vinci Code, for instance.
I'm sorry?
The Da Vinci Code, for instance.
Sure, that was the apex of her career.
Okay.
Omar Sy in The Untouchable, of course, Gad Elmaleh. Mm-hmm. We remember, of course, that in real life, Gad Elmaleh is in a relationship with Princess Charlotte of Monaco, and they have a son, but that has nothing to do with the fact that he, along with everybody else, is wasted, because this is just a piece of whimsy. It's just self-indulgent.
Sometimes a piece of whimsy can be quite fun, Richard.
Yes, it can, but when fantasy objects do what they feel that they'd like to do, or you feel you'd like them to do it, and the whole thing, obsession with Jean-Paul Sartre can be very, very irritating, and I'm frankly, I've got the notes here. They are.
Are you not getting in touch with your existential self here, Richard? Are you not kind of saying I criticise, therefore I am?
I'm simply saying I criticise and I'm not interested because I really was reduced to more or less helpless slumber, practically. Virtual slumber in the story. I mean, the point is, there's no proper story. The characters don't do anything that makes any sense, and objects do more or less anything you might think that they ought to get up to or might get up to. I mean, the whole thing's nonsense. And when is it set? It's set in Paris, I ought to make clear. And normally that greatly appeals to me. Not in this case. The whole thing's a waste of time.
And they travel around in a cloud. Still, on the plus side, it does mean that following on from yesterday's discussion with wonderful actress Stephanie Kramer, who, of course, was Dee Dee McCall in the TV series Hunter, our posited suggestion of a show with Rocket Raccoon meeting Dee Dee McCall can now be added to by saying, what about Rocket Raccoon making his way into Mood Indigo? It will probably become Mood Very Violent, but never mind, that's a different line there. Still,
you'd need to change the mood to get anything out of this. Oh, you really would. It was a bore, it's dull, it's dreary, it wastes a fine cast, and I have nothing good to say for it about it.
Quel horreur! The joy of this exhibition is the display of film with such enchanting footage of relaxed and happy royals and some simply wonderful archive of Her Majesty the Queen when Princess Elizabeth including dancing and a good deal of having fun. We're referring to royal childhood.
We are, and it's an exhibition at Buckingham Palace to the end of September. This is been going on for 21 years now, and it brought in 500,000 tourists last year, which was very impressive, and it's a lovely exhibition. Of course, the timing's perfect. It opened the very week that Prince George celebrated his first birthday.
And he can stand up.
He most certainly can, and here we have some photographs of him. We've got the lily font where he was, in which he was baptised. We've got christening gown, christening robe. We also have an extraordinary amount of footage, which I thought was absolutely lovely, because you see the Duke of Edinburgh and Prince Charles having a game, or you see Princess Elizabeth having a lot of fun with Princess Margaret. There's an enchanting photograph of the two of them. They're on a rocking horse. It's taken in 1932, and that's the poster for the exhibition. But also, it's my favourite. And it's interesting, got about 150 gifts. It begins with a silver rattle that was given to George IV when Prince of Wales in 1763, and also we have everything from dolls' houses to outfits, small uniforms, Prince Harry's uniform, like dressing gown when he went into hospital.
And Princess Elizabeth's first radio broadcast from Children's Hour, Windsor Castle, in 1940.
That's extremely moving, and it really is interesting to listen to. I'd never heard it. It reminds, I mean, a point could be made that a lot of these toys don't seem to have been used that much, because obviously, you know, you're thinking of a gift, for example. What do you give someone who has everything? The answer is that, yes, indeed, but there's also duty that calls, and if there's anyone who's given a better exemplar of a duty and service to the nation and the Queen, I can't think who it could be. It has been extraordinary. And it does bear out the saying, those who are given most also have most to give. It's very interesting because the exhibition, with various enlarged photographs and so on, there are parts of it in most of the state rooms. And also the walls are bedecked with some of them are quite well known, others not, paintings of royal children. So you really have the theme very well developed. And here's the fun bit, the children's pavilion. You can go outside and it's new in the grounds of Buckingham Palace, and you can write on a blackboard a message to the Queen, and if it's good or entertaining, they'll photograph it, and they will show the Queen some of these messages. And you can also
how frightfully retro, actually writing things down. Amazing. What was wrong with the iPad? Still astonishing.
How right you are, but there it is. You know, genuflection to past years.
Oh, there you go. A few years ago, when Harvey Weinstein got together with the delightful Gwyneth Paltrow, who would have thought it would lead to so many tears at Oscar time? Who even would have thought it would lead to a play on the London stage, which is a version of course, the aforementioned Shakespeare in Love?
You most certainly wouldn't have thought it, but I must recommend this as an absolutely enchanting evening for anyone who loves theatre, because it really works a treat, and it's so well staged. Director Declan Donnell and adapter from the original screenplay by Mark Norman and Tom Stoppard, Lee Hall, the creative genius of our greatest playwright William Shakespeare is on show, but of course he's planning to write Romeo and Ethel, the pirate's daughter, because he's got writer's block, and he falls in love with Lady Viola de Lesseps, who's secretly auditioning for his play in male guise as Thomas Kent. She's betrothed to the villainous Earl of Wessex. This is really excellent, and Lucy Briggs Owen as Viola is perfection. Tom Bateman's got the right physicality as Shakespeare, and you've got a play which it doesn't challenge the film. None of us will forget Judi Dench, and of course you have the Paltrow Fiennes performances, which were marvellous, but this is about staging.
But Richard, would it not have benefited from a strategic positioning of a water lily or perhaps a cloud-like car to kind of give it a little bit more whimsy?
I had already banished all of that as far as I possibly could to the most distant recesses of my mind, and I think it's unkind of you to bring it up again. I'm interested in the ball, the play at court, the fireworks, or indeed scenes on or off stage at the Rose. It rather reminded me, and in fact one critic made this point, of noises off the way they used the stage, because it really was quite unpredictable what you'd see, and that works excellently, and so do the supporting cast. Anna Carteret is imposing as Elizabeth I, and you've got...
she was Juliet Bravo, I believe.
Well, you are. Oh, yes, I understand so. Mm-hmm. Yes, I didn't see it, but yes, she was, and the rival theatre managers, Henslow and Burbage, you've got terrific performances, and you've got a hilariously laconic Marlowe. There's a good deal of fun to be had with Shakespeare's relationship with Marlowe. The whole thing's delightful. You've got a raccoon in...
Well, that's got to be a winner, hasn't it, really?
Yes, yeah. But I mean, I'm talking about the wolfhound.
Yeah, precisely.
We've just been talking about the raccoon in Guardians. Here's the wolfhound in Shakespeare in Love, we must give a brief mention to. But the whole thing works a treat, and the music's lovely, and I thought it's marvellous, it is exuberant, and it's a period when you've got this, and you've got Skylight, which nobody can get into now. Quite amazing.
Is it just a case of almost too much good stuff? I mean, obviously from the theatre, Shakespeare in Love, from the exhibition Royal Children at Buckingham Palace, and now we're putting in Skylight as well. Surely we have to hold back on the goodness.
Well, you can't hold back on goodness, because in fact, if you... I was noting in yesterday's Evening Standard that the numbers of those attending theatre is absolutely huge, and whereas musicals obviously are part and parcel of this, a huge part and parcel of this, it employs so many people, and it is a standard of excellence where, I mean, if you're paying, as I was being told they're charging now, or they're trying to get tickets for huge sums for Skylight.
It's a second mortgage, isn't it, really?
Well, yes. They are standing for hours to see Bill Nye and Carey Mulligan in... what is, I have to say, an absolutely superb adaptation.
Could they not go up to the Skylight and actually just look down on them from above? Just a thought.
Well, the thought may have merit.
An existential thought. It is.
We mustn't go too far into the fantasy world, because otherwise you get into mood indigo depths.
Exactly.
But I would say that Carey Mulligan was absolutely luminous in her first West End performance, playing a teacher who's found new meaning in her life after the collapse of her relationship with a wealthy restaurant owner. The dialogue by Hare does crackle superbly, and whereas it's terribly weighted, I have never been in the watching a play before when someone's made, in this case it's Carey's character Kyra, a politically weighted speech. This is a dramatic scene between the two of them. It's pretty well or a two-hander about the work social workers do. He's a capitalist, she's totally different ideologically, that they're still attracted to each other. They've had a very passionate relationship, but whilst she was living with his family, and much of it deals also with the death of his former wife, but that actually the audience applauded in the middle of a really dramatic scene between the two of them because of the intensity Mulligan put into the speech. I haven't heard that for a long time.
And the next step, they'll be having apples and tomatoes that they'll be hurling at stage for Shakespeare in Love.
They did indeed in those days with the Groundlings. I think here it's the standing ovation. And that brings me to another interesting point, because Skylight got a standing ovation, Bill Nye being very good indeed, although I thought he possibly lacked the steel to be the ruthless capitalist he was supposed to be, because he seemed to be so full of angst owing to personal unhappiness. I thought we got a part standing ovation for Shakespeare in Love. That was deserved too. My goodness me, it was.
More of a hop standing on one leg as opposed to both legs.
That can be a bit difficult. Again, it isn't the tradition of the West End that you...
We should start one, Richard. Maybe we should start the hopping ovation, which could be kind of midway between, well, it's not quite a standing ovation, but it's partway there.
Yes, again. And anyone who doesn't, Rocket Raccoon will deal with it.
Exactly. Five wonderful selections there. The Royal Children at Buckingham Palace, Skylight and Shakespeare in Love from the West End Theatre, Guardians of the Galaxy and Mood Indigo. Well, perhaps that's not a positive suggestion in the last instance there, but at least you had views in terms of the movie scenario there. We haven't got time this week to focus on Ireland. We'll come back to that next time. Richard, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the show today?
Indeed, and next time we'll also be talking about Scotland, because I'm off to Edinburgh tomorrow.
This could be crucial in the upcoming vote, of course.
This is something to bear in mind.
Yeah, absolutely. Coming up, as far as the Midweek Drive Morning Edition is concerned, on Siren 107.3 FM, where it's 25 to 9, 8:35, we'll be speaking to Susie Perry, gadget soul and key individual BBC commentator on Formula One and various other matters, who actually is going to be revealing her views on the thoughts that, Richard, some people actually have better relationships with their toasters and home devices than they have with other human beings. It's a thought.
Certainly they belong in Mood Indigo, I'd say.
Yeah, there we are, you see. We keep resonating on that basis. Meanwhile, a little reprise for Cameron Tilbury's selection from last night from Nashville. James Keith Norman, Back in the Day.
In the mud with frogs and worms.